You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev, the number one Chevrolet dealer in Canada since 2015, based on Dealer Raider's customer review site. Stop in, say hi. Right now, 20% off MSRP cash credit on select vehicles. That's Lakewood Chev. Bud Steen, 30 years as a CFL official, now an evaluator. Talking all things football. Interesting, the average penalties per game in the CFL this week, around 15, like it has been. It's gone down. But the Eskimos themselves took 14. So one team, like, it was, there's lots of defensive offsides in that game. And funny enough, we have well, let's start first of all, Bud, with the big change, fewer replays, which for me, yeah, I'm all over, because to be honest, I think command centers maybe screwed up as many as the on-field officials have.
I like it because you've got less disruption in the ball game. I mean, there are still command center replays, not challenges per se, where you're looking at whether or not a loose ball has been turned over, you know, down by contact, whether or not a score has been made, etc. But I like it. It was interesting to see how they were utilized on Friday night. Hamilton coach held on to his and wanted to use it on the very last play of the game, but in order to use the replay or to have a challenge, you've got to have a timeout remaining. And they had burned their second timeout the previous play.
Yeah, because, they called the timeout, I think, with 20 seconds left.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. So, I like it. The fewer disruptions in the ball game, as far as I'm concerned, the better.
Now, so command center on scoring plays in the final 2 minutes of, or is it 3 minutes or 2 minutes of each half? They're still going to review those. You don't have to have a challenge.
Scoring plays,
right,
are always reviewed. Always throughout the game. Every scoring play is examined by Toronto. So that doesn't change. And whether or not a ball is loose on the field, whether the player is down by contact or not,
that's reviewable.
All game. That's right.
Talking to officials, what did they think of eliminating the amount of challenges?
The guys that I've talked to are happy with it. The only negativity that I have heard associated with the change was the fact that it was done in the middle of the season. And as presented to me, what league changes its rules in the middle of the game?
The NHL, many teams have done it. That's, to me, it's a bogus, out of date. When something isn't working, yep, you don't say, well, you know what, we're going to keep our heads in the sand. No, you make a decisive decision and make a change.
Yeah, I like it. It shows me a lot of things. It shows me that the commissioner is running the game. And, I like it. You've got a new guy in town, and he's quick to make decisions and quick to make changes. So, I think it shows a positive beginning for the new commissioner and, a real solid leadership.
Now, the Eskimo game, there were a lot of penalties. There was one that wasn't called, and it was on Mike Riley. Well, I shouldn't say the play was on Mike. He had the ball. The Hamilton guy, I can't remember the number, but he came in low at Riley. Riley saw him coming. Riley jumped,
yeah,
so his leg wouldn't be planted. And so then when the contact comes, he kind of trips over. There's no penalty. So if the player dives at your feet and the quarterback has to jump to get out of the way and his feet are off the ground, if the intent was still, the guy was going in the direction regardless of where your feet are, if you move, should that not have been roughing the passer based on the wording of the rules?
No, because it's pretty strict whether or not quarterback is hit in the strike zone or not. And if the strike zone changes, essentially, the interpretation of the rule is that it is pro-offense. It is protective for the offense. And so you can only put so much, so to speak, on the shoulders of the defense. We've limited the body parts that he can hit legally, and to further limit it by saying, doesn't matter whether the quarterback ducks and gets hit in the head, or if he jumps and gets hit above the ankle, that still is a penalty. That's not how it is currently applied. That is not our standard on roughing the passer. Whether or not it's appropriate, you know, is a different question. You know, my personal view is that I believe that the strike zone should be made slightly smaller so that any hit above mid-thigh, because, you know, if a quarterback doesn't see it coming and he's fully planted and a guy comes in and hits him at the knee or just above the knee, that quarterback season is over. It's going to blow his knee to smithereens. So I do like reducing the size of it a bit, but that's going to take rules committee and competition committee to decide if that's where they want our game to go.
So we're at the third way. Well, I guess for Edmonton, it's the third. It's a little bit above because we're week seven. So just over a third way through the season, nearing Labor Day. The officials always have a few extra. There's a few more to start the season. Has officials cut down yet occurred, or does that wait till week 9 or 10?
We've lost a couple guys, but there will be a time in the next set of assignments which have not come out. They should be out, I believe, towards the end of this week. Where we'll be making some adjustments.
Now, when you say adjustments, is that just shrinking the pool?
Yes. Yeah. We'll,
by how many?
There's no set figure. Typically, you know, we're going to look to see how many games are left and how many guys we have at positions so that we've got a good set of reps and an opportunity for a week off, 1-4, so that you got a bit of a life rather than everything being about football.
So you like to rotate it so the officials ref 3 out of 4 weekends?
3 out of 4 or 4 out of 5, yes. You know, it gets, you know, just think about your life. You're doing a 9-to-5 job, and at 5 o'clock on Friday, you hammer your butt out to the international airport and put your butt on an airplane to fly to Toronto. You get in there at 11:30 at night, and you're up at 7:30 Toronto time the next day, breakfast, into a meeting, yada yada, do a football game, and get on an airplane Sunday, fly back home to the family, and, oh, by the way, I kind of feel like a bag of you-know-what, and you're going to try to grab a couple of hours and then get up the next Monday and do it all over again. It is tiring.
Would more games on the same day benefit the officials as much as the players? Where if the CFL looks and says, okay, you know what, we're going to play 4 games a week. Now, I understand there's exceptions when you have the Labor Day Monday games, but to me, I don't see any reason why there has to be a Wednesday game in the schedule ever again. There's only 4 games a week. Everybody knows it. There's 2 byes filled in. Toronto with the new stadium is supposed to have it. Edmonton, Calgary, BC, Saskatchewan, Winnipeg, they're the main tenants of their place. Yep. Hamilton, they're all the main tenants except Toronto, right? So you can't tell me they can't find 8 days over the course of 5 months for Toronto to get their home days, work around it, and just say, okay, we're going to play on Friday, Saturdays, and that's it. Is it, or Thursday, Friday? I don't care what days, yeah. But would that not benefit?
It certainly would the officials. There's no question about that, because there's far less disruption. Short turnarounds are really tough on guys. You know, again, scheduling work-wise, et cetera. But yeah, I like the idea of Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Now, once you get into the fall, fans like Sunday afternoon games. It's nice to go and sit in the sun and watch your favorite ball club play on a Sunday. I'm with you. I mean, I think we've seen we've had a Monday game this year already, and it wasn't a holiday Monday, and Wednesday games, no. I'm not a big fan of that. Let's get it back so that to the best extent possible, the players have a decent break between games so that they can recover some of their bruises and the ball club can install its next game plan, and you know, it may improve the quality of the game.
Bud Steen joins us inside the stripes. So as you move through the season and the evaluations come in, historically, if a line judge or a back judge has had a tendency to make the same miss every second week or so, does it make an improvement? Should we start to see changes in the officials at this point of the season now?
Yeah, typically you will see that the negative results of the evaluation start to go down as the year progresses. There are fewer mistakes made, and the players are playing better, and the officials are right on top of their game. And lots of times you'll only see if something isn't called, there may be mitigating circumstances like a 60-1 score or something like that.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Not obviously, I understand the score of the game has to impact how the game is, but we haven't seen as people like to complain about it. It was no different. And I do want to ask your opinion on it because I was watching the game, and I think a lot of times it impacts negatively on the officials when you have the TSN crew saying, "Oh, look, they have a timeout," when they don't have a timeout.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have your play-by-play guys making statements falsifying about the officials. Why isn't there an official in the booth like the NFL has done? Why have you talked to Randy Ambrosi about this? Because I'd be curious.
I haven't spoken to the commissioner about it, and of course the commissioner doesn't run the TSN broadcast team. I really believe that TSN should have a rules expert with them, someone who understands the game, the flow of the game, and what's going on to assist. They don't have to be, frankly, even available on air. They could be like their statistician who is in the background feeding them brilliant pieces of information that they can throw out at the appropriate time. I just think it would be better. It would do a positive push for the football game if the information that was being telecast to our primary audience was accurate.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's you can educate your audience by having someone who knows. And we've talked to players, we've talked to coaches. They don't know every rule. I understand it. I don't expect I didn't know every rule before we started this segment either.
Right.
So I understand it, but you can really mislead people and people get all fired up about things. Then you turn around because people in Hamilton were freaking out. They thought the clock had run down, which it hadn't incorrectly because I wanted to go over that play. There are times when the clock starts running and then other times where it's different because they thought the clock ran when it shouldn't have, even though he went out of bounds, but because they deemed his forward progress, like he stopped in the field of play and then kind of retreated backwards and went out of bounds. Yep. That's why the clock, once they put it in on the down marker, they whistled it in.
Yeah. It's interesting because on that play, Coach Austin was quite close to the head linesman and the head linesman was very clear. He was yelling at the coach, "Look, I'm up here. I'm giving him forward progress. The clock is going to start." I could read his lips as he was doing it. And Austin nodded. He acknowledged the information.
He
knew what was going on, and they hustled. The referee properly brought the clock in because the ball went dead in bounds. Again, it's just educating the fans so that they clearly understand precisely how the timing rules work, how all of the rules work. And, it doesn't have to be boring. It can be simply educational, and it will assist people a great deal in understanding what's going on. Another thing that I would like to see them consider is similar to the Football 101 that the Eskimos put on, where TSN would talk to people that only have a passing interest. They're sitting watching a football game because their mate is a huge football fan. And maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea to do a segment to educate them on the basics of the game. They've never played the game. They're only watching it out of love. Teach them the game. And then, who knows, they may very well fall in love with the game.
Well, that's like any fan of any sport. You could be a fan of the game and you just like it, but you don't necessarily know all of the rules. And so you educate, because a lot of times when people start using words like boundary corner, most people don't know what the boundary corner is.
Yeah.
Just talk short side of the field. And most people can relate to that. Okay, here's the hash marks. If they line up on the right hash, and the short side of the field is between that hash marks and the sidelines and the far side.
Yeah.
Strong or weak, even strong or weak. And I think they can understand. Boundary corner is a term they should never use because 90% of people don't know what it is.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's a lot of lingo associated with all sports. And the more that it's broadcast, the more confused your audience could become.
Quickly, moving to the next few weeks for the officials, what's Like, what's the ideal number? And the crews, have you guys decided, is it keeping the same crew better or rotating all the time? Has there been, I don't know if you guys have studied numbers, is there more consistency from officials when they stay in crews, or is it better when they're having new people come in all the time to keep them sharp?
It's my experience that there is more consistency when you remain in crews for an extended period of time, because you get very used to and comfortable with the group you're working with. Downside is, come playoffs, do you want to remain in crews, or do you want to put the best officials at specific positions out on the field? That's one of the debates. The other debate, of course, is just pure economics. It's less expensive to bring people in that are not stapled together on a crew than if you're flying a crew around all over the country from east to west. So, you know, there's lots of forces. Officials go both ways on it. Those that have worked in strong crews love the concept of working in crews. Other guys prefer working in the mishmash that we've got right now because you're exposed to all of the officials. You get to know everybody and their tendencies, so that when it comes to the playoffs, you've seen Joe. You've seen Joe as head linesman. You're very comfortable with what he's doing, and you know you're in a good place to start your playoff game.
Now, one last thing before I let you go. We talked earlier, we started off about the Mike Riley when he left, so his feet, it's a moving target. So what if a guy comes to hit a quarterback and the quarterback ducks his head at the last second, and then it's contact to the head? Why is it, even though he's moving the target, why is that one a penalty, but not when you move his feet if you're attacking?
If he ducks, it shouldn't be a penalty.
It shouldn't be.
Should not be a penalty.
Even though a lot of times any contact to the head is flagged?
Well, true. But if he's bringing that into the place where the defensive player was otherwise targeting, the defensive man has committed himself to hit the quarterback within the strike zone, and all of a sudden quarterback decides to pull his head into the strike zone, well, that's on the quarterback.